Good morning. My name is Richard, and I will be your conference operator. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Restructuring Conference Call. All lines have been placed on a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct an interactive question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during that time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request and a prompt to record your name. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press star, then the number two. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. England. Sir, you may begin.
Okay, thank you, Richard. Good morning, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the ISDA market call on the settlement of restructuring credit events. I'm Karel Engeler, Director at ISDA, and I'm joined on this call by my colleagues David Geen, Mark New, and Deirdre Leahy, and several other speakers from the industry. Last Thursday, ISDA sent the term sheet for the implementation of auction settlement following a restructuring credit event to the membership, and the documents, a term sheet, and also a summary of the term sheet are publicly available on the ISDA website on the credit page, which is isda.org/credit. The term sheet is the interim work product from the working group that is looking at how to apply the auction mechanism to restructuring credit events. Settlement of restructuring credit events was excluded from the Big Bang Protocol. The group committed to publish a term sheet by the middle of June, and the term sheet lays out in detail all the principles with regard to the settlement of a restructuring credit event. And over the next 3 weeks, the working group will turn these principles into a protocol, the so-called Small Bank Protocol. So the Small Bank Protocol itself is scheduled to be open for a period of 2 weeks from July 13th to July 24th and will become effective on Monday, July 27th. Before July 13th, we will obviously make draft versions of the protocol available for comments, but it is important to stress that comments and questions on the principles, if any, should be raised as soon as possible based on the term sheet documents. For today's call, we will first give you an overview of the principles in the term sheet. We circulated earlier today a presentation that we will run through, and if you did not get that email, you will find that presentation on the website as well, so isda.org/credit. And after that presentation, we will have the possibility for a Q&A session. So with that, let me turn it over to David Lucking from Allen & Overy, who will start the presentation.
Thanks very much, Carl. So the presentation really walks you through the summary term sheet, but I would recommend that you take a look at the slides if you have them in front of you. What I'd like to start with is really just give a little bit of background to the issue that we're trying to resolve here. As you will be aware, following a restructuring credit event under the 2003 definitions, there are three different sets of provisions that may apply to the deliverable obligations that can be delivered for settlement, and parties will elect in their contract whether or not to apply standard restructuring or old restructuring, modified restructuring, which generally applies here in the U.S., or modified restructuring, which generally applies over in Europe. The differences between those three sets of provisions are that for modified restructuring and modified restructuring, there are maturity limitation dates that are set on the types of deliverable obligation that can be delivered, placing an additional criteria on what may be delivered for settlement. Now, this creates a problem for the existing auction methodology that that we have been applying to recent credit events, mainly because the auction methodology as currently drafted requires that there is a single list of deliverable obligations. With the maturity limitation date, the maturity limitation dates are defined to be applicable based upon the scheduled termination date of specific transactions. So the restructuring maturity limitation date under MODAR is the earlier of 2.5 years following the restructuring date and the latest final maturity date of any restructured bond or loan. But the restructuring maturity limitation date will never be earlier than the scheduled termination date of the relevant transaction. Similarly, in ModModR, the modified restructuring maturity limitation date is the later of the scheduled termination date and either a date that falls 5 years following the restructuring date with respect to a restructured bond or loan, or 2.5 years following the restructuring date for all other deliverable obligations. So you can see that what will be deliverable for one transaction with a specific scheduled termination date may not be deliverable for another transaction with a different scheduled termination date. So it's not always going to be easy to have a single list of deliverable obligations for purposes of the auction. So the solution that is proposed will apply to ModR and ModModR where these maturity limitation date provisions apply. And the solution is that we may hold multiple auctions with respect to a single restructuring credit event. Those multiple auctions will be held with respect to a new concept that we have called maturity buckets. So an auction may be held for anything up to 8 different maturity buckets. The maturity buckets have been set with maturity dates of 2.5 years, 5 years, 7.5 years, 10 years, 12.5 years, 15 years, 20 years, and 30 years. And the purpose of the maturity buckets is to allocate transactions to a particular maturity bucket so that we try and replicate as closely as possible the current provisions relating to maturity limitations, and so that a transaction that in the old regime would have only been able to deliver obligations with a maturity of, say, 5 years will not get the benefit of longer dated obligations being valued in the auction. So upon the occurrence of a restructuring credit event, transactions will get allocated to the different maturity buckets, and the maturities of the maturity buckets are actually set and will not be changed by the determinations committee. It is therefore kind of easy to see which transaction, which maturity bucket a transaction will be allocated to. With one exception, that we have a rounding down provision where a transaction may actually get moved from one maturity bucket to another, and I'll explain how that works shortly. The Determinations Committee will decide whether or not to hold an auction for transactions assigned to a particular maturity bucket based upon DTCC trade data. And it's proposed that an auction will always be held if certain objective criteria are met, but if there are a very small number of transactions assigned to a particular maturity bucket, then the Determinations Committee may decide not to hold an auction for that particular maturity bucket. Each time a restructuring occurs, the Determinations Committee will generate lists of deliverable obligations for each maturity bucket. The maturity bucket concept will apply now in all circumstances, essentially replacing the current maturity limitation date provisions in the definitions. And the idea behind that is to remove any incentive that the Determinations Committee may have following a particular restructuring event of whether or not to hold an auction. So the Determinations Committee comprises the list of deliverable obligations in a similar way to the way that the Determinations Committee currently comprises lists of deliverable obligations for purposes of auctions. A deliverable obligation will be assigned to a particular maturity bucket if its final maturity date occurs on or prior to the maturity bucket end date that is set for that particular maturity bucket. The one exception relates to the first maturity bucket that applies under ModModR, where restructured bonds or loans with a final maturity date of up to 5 years will be deliverable to settle transactions with scheduled termination dates occurring 2.5 years or less after the restructuring date. And this is to mirror the current modified restructuring maturity limitation date definition. Any deliverable obligations that are assigned to a maturity bucket will also be deliverable or valued in an auction that is held for purposes of a maturity bucket that has a longer dated maturity bucket end date. So this is something that people should just be aware of when the auction process actually takes place. But basically, all of the obligations that are assigned to shorter maturity buckets will also obviously be deliverable or valued in the auction for longer-dated maturity buckets. I said that there was a circumstance where transactions may actually get moved from a particular maturity bucket that it would otherwise have been assigned to. We refer to this in the term sheet as the rounding down convention, and it automatically applies. And the purpose of the rounding down convention is to avoid giving the buyer the benefit of longer dated obligations which in the old regime it wouldn't otherwise have had access to. So if a transaction has been assigned to a maturity bucket that contains no deliverable obligations with the final maturity date occurring prior to the scheduled termination date of that particular transaction, then that transaction automatically gets reassigned to the appropriate earlier maturity bucket. So on the slide, you can see the example of a transaction with a scheduled termination date occurring 8 years away that would be assigned to the 10-year maturity bucket. But if there are only obligations with a 9-year final maturity date in the 10-year maturity bucket, then that transaction will get moved down to a shorter maturity bucket. In this example, the only other obligations that are available are 4-year obligations, so the transaction would skip over the 7.5-year maturity bucket and would be moved to the 5-year maturity bucket. Now, unlike other credit events following the Big Bang protocol, we have retained unlike other credit events where the determinations committee determines that an auction will be held, we have retained the ability for the parties to those transactions to trigger. And so the buyer and the seller, to the extent that there are two notifying parties, will retain the freedom to decide whether or not to send in a notice triggering settlement following a restructuring. But once the credit event notice is sent, if an auction will be held, then the date that the question of whether a restructuring occurred was raised to the determinations committee will be set as a common event determination date for all triggered transactions. In order to settle based upon the terms of any auction that gets held, a credit event notice must be effectively delivered prior to the exercise deadline. The notifying parties will know at the point in time when they trigger what the list of deliverable obligations are for the different maturity buckets in order for them to effectively determine whether or not they want to trigger following the restructuring. We have, as I've mentioned, 8 different maturity buckets, and it may not be necessary or desirable to hold 8 separate auctions. The determinations committee will determine whether or not to hold an auction based on a number of factors. First, the issue of whether there are actually different obligations allocated to a particular maturity bucket. And then also they will determine whether to hold an auction based upon DTCC data of triggered transactions to check that there is sufficient volume of transactions that would need to settle via an auction that will be held for a particular maturity bucket. But the dealers have committed to hold an auction in all circumstances if 500 or more transactions assigned to a particular maturity bucket are triggered, and five or more of the dealer members of the determinations committee are party to those transactions. And this new criteria will be included in the determinations committee's rules for all credit events going forwards. If the criteria are not met, that doesn't preclude the determinations committee from deciding to hold an auction for other maturity buckets. It's just the minimum standard. If no auction is held, then the parties have the ability to exercise an option to move their transaction to a maturity bucket for which an auction will be held. And so I'll explain now how that movement option works. The buyer's option is to move the transaction down to a maturity bucket with an earlier maturity bucket end date. So we're not giving the buyer the option, obviously, to obtain access to longer dated obligations, but the buyer can, if it so desires, move the transaction down to a maturity bucket with earlier dated obligations for which an auction is going to be held. The seller, similarly, may also decide that it would like to exercise its movement option, and when seller exercises the movement option, it will get moved to the 30-year maturity bucket and will be treated as though seller had actually triggered the contract. The movement option needs to be exercised within 3 business days of the exercise deadline, so within 3 business days of the date for triggering settlement itself. And the first party to exercise the option will determine whether the transaction moves and in what direction the transaction moves. If the movement option is not exercised, then the transaction settles in accordance with the fallback settlement method, so either cash or physical settlement, but still remains subject to the maturity bucket limitations. So the only obligations that will be either deliverable or valued in a dealer poll would be obligations that would be allocated to the relevant maturity bucket. The next slide hopefully gives you a visual of the timeline for the process. I don't intend to walk through that in any detail. One important thing to note is the impact of these changes on certain index transactions. Both ITRAX and the CDX, Emerging Markets and Emerging Markets Diversified Indices, specify or may specify for certain reference entities restructuring as a credit event. Particularly in the ITRAX Europe Index, restructuring applies with the mod-mod-R provisions applicable. Obviously, because we allow the parties the ability to retain the choice of whether or not to decide to trigger following a restructuring or not, we want to this could create problems for fungibility of index trades, because you could have transactions where the entity has been triggered and other transactions where the entity has not been triggered, creating essentially two types of transactions purporting to reference the same index. So the solution that has been proposed for untranched transactions is that upon the determination of a restructuring credit event, the reference entity that's been the subject of the restructuring will be removed from the relevant index and will be set aside as a separate single name transaction. That single name transaction can then work as any other single name transaction, giving the parties the flexibility to decide whether or not to trigger, but without creating multiple versions of the index. So all versions of the index will have that reference entity removed, and then it's just the single name transactions that may or may not get triggered. For tranche transactions, though, there is the problem of deciding how to split out the relevant reference entity that's been the subject of the restructuring, because obviously when purchasing or selling protection on a tranche of the index, you're not buying or selling protection on the full notional amount of the reference entity in the index, but on a delta amount. And therefore, a solution is still being worked on to determine how to actually remove the reference entity from the index. So in the interim, and for purposes of the small bang protocol, we'll apply a solution whereby the reference entity will remain in the index, and only those transactions for which the reference entity is actually triggered and settlement is triggered will continue to be treated as index transactions following the exercise deadline. If the option to trigger is not exercised, then that transaction will convert to a bespoke tranche portfolio transaction rather than being treated as a tranche index transaction. The last thing to mention is that for transactions that reference what I call old restructuring, and this is obviously particularly relevant for reference entities out in Asia, it is going to be possible, and it is currently possible, that we could at least the auction methodology would work with those types of transactions. And so we're going to remove from the Determinations Committee rules the prohibition on holding an auction following a restructuring, because under ODAR there are no maturity limitations, so the issues about coming up with a single list of deliverable obligations is not a problem. One small change that we'll be making to the 2003 definitions with respect to ODAR is that we will be disapplying Section 3.9 of the credit derivatives definitions, because, again, it's not really necessary to have that apply to ODAR, because there's no distinction on the types of obligations that can be delivered or valued depending upon whether or not buyer or seller has triggered. So the next steps, as Carl has already mentioned, is that we will be implementing these changes via a new supplement to the 2003 definitions, a restructuring supplement, which will be incorporated into existing transactions, and in the same way as we have done in the Big Bang Protocol, certain new transactions via a small bang protocol. And it's anticipated that that small bang protocol will be open for adherence on July 13th. As I've mentioned, there are certain changes that will need to also be made to the rules, and we will be following the procedure already in the Determinations Committee rules for publishing amendments to the rules and having those available for consultation on the ISDA website. So that concludes the formal presentation. I've set out some email addresses of people involved in the project at Allen and Overy if you have questions over the coming weeks. But now I'll turn it back to Carl, and we can open it up for a Q&A session on the call.
Okay. Thank you, David. So, yes, we'll open it up for Q&A now. Operator, do you want to give the instructions?
Yes, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to participate in the interactive question and answer session, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request and a prompt to record your name. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press star, then the number 2. We will pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Just a moment as we queue the roster. Your first question comes from the line of Matthew Carney.
I had a question. We had two outstanding CDS that we did not register for the original protocol, but we plan to do so for the, I guess, the small bang. And I just wanted to understand how that would work, and would our new our existing CDS that were placed prior to or a year or so ago would fall under the new the new regulations or requirements.
Hey, Matthew, before I turn it over to one of the speakers here to respond, can you please, and also for the other people that have questions, can you please also indicate the institution that you're from?
Yes, with Ridgeworth.
Ridgeworth. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, so by adhering to the small bang protocol, we're actually including a provision in the small bang protocol that will deem you to have also adhered to the big bang. So anyone that missed the deadline for adhering to the big bang will get a second chance by signing up to the small bang.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, please press star then one for any questions. Currently, there are no further questions.
Okay, we'll give it another minute to see if people have further questions.
Again, as a reminder, please press star followed by one on your touchtone phone if you would like to ask a question. Your next question comes from the line of Joachim Kuhnen.
The ZBank Germany. Did I understand you right that banks who did not sign the big bang protocol and will sign the small bang protocol will have all the consequences of the big bang protocol included?
Yes. Yes, that's right. And it is necessary as well for the way that the small bang protocol works, for us to also include the provisions that relate that are in the big bang, because obviously we are piggybacking off the concepts of the determinations committees, etc., which are already contained in the big bang protocol.
Okay, fine, but the question is whether that applies to all historical trades or only for the future trades. That's why we did not sign the Big Bang Protocol, because we did not want to have a large amount of our historic trade populations to be included in the Big Bang Protocol.
This is Thanasi Duplas from Deutsche Bank. I mean, that is exactly the purpose of the having a protocol, is actually to address the existing outstanding trades and try to reduce the basis between past trades and future trades. So all of those, both the big bang and the small bang, are basically a protocol and also a change for the trades going forward, and the two of them have to be done together. So, and as David mentioned, basically all the infrastructure that we put in place with respect to the determinations committee and the whole legal framework was actually put together under the big bang, and this is only a change with respect to restructuring. So it has to be a package deal, basically.
Yeah, this is Tom Bettis at JPMorgan. I think it's important to remember that the reason for the small bang is to be able to include restructuring in essentially the big bang structure. It was excluded from that because of some of these issues. So this is meant to solve that. So the small bang, just in isolation, doesn't really make any sense in the market.
Well, also from a systemic risk standpoint, I mean, we're trying to address the issue of dealing with the settlement of restructuring credit events for what is actually the existing population, which is vast, and also render the contract more suitable for clearing. And in order to fulfill those objectives, there's no way we could ignore the existing population.
Jochen, does that address your question?
Yes, it does.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Abe Scigliso.
Abe, go ahead and can you please indicate which institution you are from?
Abe Scigliso, your line is open. There's no response. We'll move to the next question, which comes from the line of Darren Thomas.
Darren, go ahead.
Darren Thomas, your line is open.
Ask the operator to take the names properly.
Darren Thomas, your line is open. It will move to the next question, which comes from the line of Thomas D'Ambrosio.
Hi, this is Tom D'Ambrosio from Morgan Lewis. With respect to the auctions that are that would be run under the small bank protocol, if a party ultimately wanted to sell the obligation, would there always be under all circumstances the ability to sell the obligation, or are there some cases due to the fact of the various maturity buckets where you might not be able to sell the obligation?
I'm sorry, just to clarify, when you say sell the obligation, you mean deliver. That someone has bought protection and they want to physically deliver?
Correct.
Right.
So this is John Williams from Allen and Overy. Since there will, as David said, there will be different auctions for different maturity buckets, and that will mean that when you are, if you're a customer, and if you're familiar with the auction terminology that we've been using, your market position, in other words, the total size of your position, which serves as a cap as to how much of a physical settlement request you can submit, will be determined on a per auction basis, right? And so if you have a trade with, that's in the five-year bucket, and you have a particular bond with the same maturity that you want to deliver, you can include that in your market position for purposes of calculating how big of a physical settlement request you can put into the five-year bucket auction. You cannot put in a physical settlement request relating to that trade in the 30-year bucket, right? So if your only trade is that one five-year trade, you have to put your physical settlement request in on that five-year.
So you can sell it, but it needs to fit within the bucket that your trade is in.
Correct.
That's fine, but any purchase of protection would have the ability to deliver the bonds associated with that trade.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we'll go to the next question.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, please press star then one for any questions. Your next question comes from the line of Richard Swoes.
Richard, you're difficult to hear. Can you please speak up, and can you also indicate which institution you are from?
Yes. Can you hear me now?
It's a little bit better, but still very faint.
Okay. It's Richard Seuss from Norges Bank.
Okay, go ahead.
I wanted to ask whether or not is the participants could actually still submit a list of deliverable obligations to the DC in these cases for them to consider.
Yes, the process for the is the same for the determinations committee. We have given also a timeline in terms of how the committee will deal with the initial preliminary list and initial list and everything else, but you do have the right to submit obligations to the determinations committee.
Is there any time frame? Is that a similar time frame to the existing auction process?
Yes, that's right. And the slide with the timeline kind of sets out the different business days that will be used as a minimum for coming up with those lists.
It's the same as for the regular auction, right? So all of these things about creating the buckets and determining whether you have an auction are layered on top of the same process for creating lists and allowing challenges that exists in the auction today.
Okay.
Your next question comes from the line of Dean Cloner.
Dean, go ahead.
Dean Cloner at Sidley, can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Dean.
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Could you just repeat or elaborate on what you're thinking about doing with respect to tranched index transactions?
So for a tranched index transaction, what will happen is that the determinations committee will resolve that a restructuring has occurred, and parties will decide whether or not they want to trigger with respect to that credit event. To the extent that they do trigger, then obviously that name then gets settled, and there's no longer protection being sold on that name. So in that way, the index looks the same as the index that applies for untranched trades where the name actually gets extracted out of the index. So that tranched index transaction will continue to be treated as a transaction referencing the relevant series of the ITRAX index. If the parties decide that they don't want to trigger following the restructuring credit event, then instead the list of names continues to contain the reference entity, and so a further credit event, say a follow-up bankruptcy or failure to pay, would be triggerable, in which case that version of the portfolio no longer represents the same list as the index represents for untranched trades, and so that trade will be treated as a bespoke portfolio.
If the parties do not elect to the restructuring credit event,
exactly.
Got it. Thank you so much.
Okay, next question.
Your next question comes from the line of Thomas Boehm.
Good evening. I was just wondering, you mentioned before that it's basically there's a second chance to adhere to the big bank protocol. Is it basically automatically while adhering to the small bank protocol, it's mandatory basically to adhere to the big bank protocol, or is there kind of like an optional choice?
Hey, Thomas, which institution are you from?
We are LBBW. We already adhere to the Big Bang protocol. However, we have some minor customers that did not adhere to the Big Bang protocol, and they were wondering whether there's a chance to adhere. I was not just wondering whether it's mandatory or optional.
Yeah, it'll be automatic because, as Vanessa said before, we need a lot of that infrastructure that's already in the Big Bang protocol for the small bank protocol to work. Also, the whole idea is to avoid the basis risk between old and new trades.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, please press star then one for any questions. And there are no further questions at this time. Again, as a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, please press star then one for any questions.
Okay, well, while we're waiting for potentially last set of questions, just a reminder of the timeline. So obviously the term sheet is out there. It's available on the website. You have the presentation as well. Any additional questions that you would have, you have the contacts at Allen & Overy, you have the contacts at ISDA, but also certainly do speak to your counterparties, to your dealers. The timelines with regard to the protocol, so the protocol, the small bank protocol, is planned to open on Monday, July 13th. It would be open for 2 weeks until the following Friday, which is July the 24th. And the adherence would become effective on July 27th.
So it's John Williams from Allen & Overy. One other thing about the timelines. I think people should please take to heart what Carl said at the beginning of the call, which is that if you have any concerns or questions about how this will work, or you think that there are any issues that are not adequately addressed, you really should comment on the basis of the term sheet and not wait to see drafts of the changes to the supplement or to the rules. The reasons for this are twofold. One is, in fact, the drafts of the supplement and the rules will not be released very far in advance of the publication of the protocol. So we probably will release something for comment at some point next week, but that won't leave people very much time. But more importantly, based on the work we did on the Big Bang protocol, I think it's much easier for people to understand the economic and operational implications of what's being done when you read it in the term sheet format than it is when you read it in the format that we necessarily have to use to update the supplement, because that's an update to the supplement, which is an update to the definitions, and it can be confusing even for long seasoned practitioners to work their way through the implications of the definitions. So I would really encourage you to read the term sheet very closely and try to think of any questions or concerns you can come up with, starting today, or hopefully many of you out there have already started doing that. And the dealer group and ISDA is very interested to receive any comments or questions you have on that basis as soon as possible.
Okay, so, operator, are there any final questions?
Yes, sir. Your next question comes from the line of Darren Thomas.
Yeah, hello. It's Martin Winter here. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Couple of questions, actually. The first one is with respect to the exercise deadline. 5 business days after the final list has been published by ISDA, we need to trigger. What are the business days based upon? Is it the underlying CDS?
It'll be based upon, I believe, where the auction is going to be held. So if we are, we'll be looking to apply New York business days. If we're looking at a North American corporate restructuring, similarly, we'll be applying the London business days if we're looking at a Western European corporate, et cetera.
Okay, thanks. And secondly, let's supposing there are 8 auctions. Can you confirm that the plan is to hold all 8 auctions on the same day? And will there be any preference in terms of order of buckets?
I believe we will definitely be looking to hold the auctions on the same day, and would not be releasing information about the final price of one ahead of the data with respect to other auctions. So the idea is that everything happens concurrently and that the information for each of the auctions gets disseminated at the same time.
Okay, thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Matthew Carney.
Yes, hello, Matthew Kiney from Ridgeway Capital Management. We have 2 open credit default swaps with term dates of 2012 and 2017. Would they fall, one in fall in a 5-year bucket and one fall in a 10-year bucket?
Yes, and then it also depends on what the maturities of the existing deliverable obligations are.
Okay.
Right. So if, for example, you only have obligations that are that mature in, let's say, 2012, either equal to or just short of your 2012 trade, and then the rest of the obligations all mature after 2017, then your 2017 trade is going to be rounded down into the same bucket as your 2012 trade.
Okay. Right. Okay, now do we have to roll into the standard coupon contracts of 100 basis points and 500 basis points?
No. No, your existing trades won't, the coupons on your existing trades would not be affected by the protocol.
Okay.
Your next question comes from the line of Ave Skigluzu.
Hello?
They withdrew their question, and there are no further questions.
Okay, so if there are no further questions, I think we can conclude this presentation. Again, the materials, we did send them around. They are available on the ISBA website, and certainly more materials will follow. We also did record this presentation, this conference call, so that recording will be available on the website shortly as well if you have colleagues that were not in a position to listen to this presentation. So with that, I would like to thank the different speakers for their input and thank all of you for listening to the presentation today, and that concludes the conference.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's restructuring conference call. You may now disconnect.